Thank you very much indeed, Deputy Secretary General, for your kind remarks and also for your presentation, which has presented the situation so starkly and so clearly and so importantly. I have just one question to start with. I'm afraid we have a number of questions, but may I ask you, are you satisfied, is NATO satisfied that there is sufficient material and support for Ukraine now, and will it continue? Are countries running short of ammunition? Are you satisfied that the effort will be sufficient to bolster Ukraine to continue this war?
Thank you. That's a very valid question, Mary. I think there are two components here. One is the political will for allies and partners. 50 countries around the world are in the Rammstein process, in the contact group for Ukraine, working day in and day out with our Ukrainian partners just to see how can we dynamically respond to their needs as the situation on the ground evolves. So politically, I would say we are very united. We just had the defense ministers in NATO 2 weeks back. We had the Rammstein group. I think politically, we are fine. We are united, and the will to continue to help is there. Now, you touched on an important issue. For many, many years and decades in Europe, we collected the peace dividend after the fall of communism. We all did. Countries, in NATO, countries in the EU, countries like Switzerland, everyone, including our countries, my country, my home country of Romania and Poland and the others, we also joined NATO and the EU. All of us, in a way, thrived and prospered in a sort of a benign strategic environment. One of the implications of such a relatively benign strategic reality in Europe is that we started to underinvest in our defense, in our stockpiles, in our industrial capacity, and Ukraine is a wake-up call that we have to do much more. So I'm confident that allies are ramping up production. NATO is sending a very strong demand signal to the industries. I see already contracts offered by governments to their industry. Also for the EU, in a way, I think it's a wake-up call. I'm a EU citizen. I'm coming from Romania, also a EU member state. And I think also the huge fragmentation in the EU defense industry needs to be overcome somehow. So I think that we'll be spending more, spending better. NATO is changing our requirements for minimum stockpile levels for us, and of course, being able to continue to provide Ukraine with the amounts of support that they need. So on the first front, politically, we are very united. On the second one, there is an effort that all of us need to make.
Thank you. Thank you for that reply. Deputy Secretary General, you mentioned undersea cables, and that certainly touches a nerve here in Ireland. And I have a number of questions from Conor Gallagher, Irish Times, and Conor O'Keefe, Cormac O'Keefe, Irish Examiner, about the undersea security cell. Is that something that you see that Ireland would cooperate with, or will it be involved in working with NATO on the undersea cell cooperation? Because, of course, there are such significant cables leading into the country that it's a matter of considerable worry to us here.
I discussed with your Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of Foreign Affairs and Defence, and former Prime Minister in Munich. I mentioned this in my remarks. And I think there is interest for Ireland, but also I met the Foreign Minister of Malta, same interest. I met the Foreign Minister of Jordan, same interest. I met the Secretary General of the Gulf Cooperation Council, same interest. Because I think we touched a very sensitive and real point of concern to all of us. I remember I was chairing the North Atlantic Council when we invited three CEOs to brief the Council on this very thing. The CEO of the Swedish electricity company, the CEO of the Norwegian oil and gas company, and the lead engineer for Google, the largest owner and provider of undersea data transmission through fiber optics on the seabed. And that's a clear understanding that this is something that is at the intersection between governments, private sector, defense, and local authorities. So this cell we are now establishing, it will be a sort of a conglomerate of these actors. So, of course, if Ireland will be interested in our already very dynamic partnership to find ways to cooperate also on this topic, we'll be very open to that proposition.
Thank you for that, yes. Another aspect of this war, Deputy Secretary General, in disinformation and espionage, Cormac O'Keefe, a journalist, is probably rife throughout the EU. Do individual countries, do you feel, need to do more about this in the context of the war overall? Are we combating Russian propaganda and disinformation in this regard sufficiently?
No, Russia has been doing this against our interests for years now. And I cannot say which country did well and which country did not do that well. But I know that this hybrid warfare arsenal against our interests is a tool of preference. And this is something that Russia is now only amplifying. So that's why we need to take this issue very seriously. It's not only fighting espionage, that I think our counterintelligence is the job description. But that's something very, very pervasive in basically amplifying the fractures in our own societies. In some cases, even funding parties that are against the Western orientation in our nations. Cyber attacks. Many issues that are basically what they call it here in NATO, just under the threshold of Article 5. And also because there is this difficult time for Russia and Ukraine, they are amplifying this kind of horizontal escalation of hybrid warfare against our interest in the West. And we see this, and together in NATO, together NATO and the EU, together on this information, NATO, EU, and the G7, we have a working group working together, and also reaching out to private sector to help us with that. I'm not mentioning specific corporations because I don't want to be making any kind of marketing for anyone. But I have to say that in NATO, in the EU, I think each of our nations are also working with private sector because they have first-hand information about cyber protection. They are the ones who can also identify and debunk the conspiracy theories that abound coming from Russia and sometimes also from China. To speak of a cyber attack, our Albanian friends and allies here in NATO, they had a very powerful cyber attack from Iran against the Ministry of the Interior in Tirana just, I think, a few months back. So that's why resilience is a team sport, as I mentioned. Fighting disinformation is part of that. And I think that the open free societies, and Ireland is an example of an open free society and democratic society, we have to find democratic and free answers to this kind of very corrosive actions that Russia and others are taking.
Thank you. Yes. That's headlining a warning to us all, I think, and to all countries in Europe in that regard. Could I turn to the United States, Deputy Secretary General, a colleague and former ambassador to the United States, to the US and Germany, Noel Fahey, is asking about the United States' commitment to the war. I'm adding on, I'd be hoping that it will continue. We're conscious that there is an American presidential election coming down the tracks. But Noel Fahey's question is, do you see the U.S. pivot to Asia as a distraction to security in Europe, particularly, of course, the U.S. Preoccupation with China? We've had Chancellor Scholz visiting there, and a commitment to continue the support for Ukraine. But just your view on the U.S. involvement in the war, and also certain distractions with China.
You know, you know America well. You're so much intertwined with the very fabric of the American society. But I also know American well. I served there as a very young ambassador. I was foreign minister. I'm a politician, and I think I know America well. I think one of the bipartisan realities rediscovered by our American friends and allies is, to put in the word of Secretary General Stoltenberg in his address in a session of the Joint Congress a few years back, it's good to have friends. And I think America discovered in this huge competition against China and now Russia and Iran and whoever else that the system of alliances and partnerships around the world, in Europe and around the world, is something that America has, it's its number one strategic asset. Of course, it has a very dynamic country, a still very young country, a country that can is economically, technologically, militarily a global superpower. But they realize that in these very complex times, allies are just so precious. And this is bipartisan. I was looking to a poll conducted by the Chicago Council on World Affairs, and it was something close to 70-something percent of Americans believe NATO is a great alliance, serving America's interests. There's no other organization in the world, and America has now 31 allies in one organization. And our close connections to Japan, to Australia, to South Korea and New Zealand as NATO, their leaders are coming to our summits starting last year. They'll be coming also in Vilnius this year. So I heard this sort of a litany that America is pivoting towards Asia since, I think, President Obama. I hear it every single time when there is a change of administration. I tell you one thing. America's alliances are the best asset for us. America's involvement in European security is our interest. And for America, having so many allies in Europe and elsewhere is also a plus. And many of the threats that will be all of us will be faced will not be geographical, Mary. Some of them, like cyber, like technology, like space, like new technologies, like biotech, many places where your country excels, are non-geographical by nature. Some are geographical. The competition for the future of Africa. We need all the resources we have for Asia, for Latin America. So, to be honest, I'm not that concerned about the risk that American political leadership and the American public will go away from its traditional alliances in Europe. I think that on the other way, also Europe needs to understand that we have to fight and push back against challenges that are also non-European, but also global. So I'm pretty confident that this alliance and America's leadership in this alliance will continue for more than 70 years, since 75 since we were started at the end of the Second World War.
That's very reassuring. Thank you. And as you said, we're special friends with America. That's good. That's good to hear that. I have many, many questions, but there is one that has required, I think Shona Murray from Euronews puts it. Are you confident that Hungary and Turkey will eventually ratify the Sweden and Finland accession, since it appears that Prime Minister Orban is using his vote as leverage against the EU for rule of law issues? That's quite a tangle between the EU and NATO. But obviously, we're all interested to know if that the membership of Sweden and Finland will be unblocked, Deputy Secretary General.
Let me just remind everyone that in Madrid, when we invited all 30 allies by consensus, we invited Sweden and Finland to join. That was done, by consensus. So now we are just in the process of ratification. I'm not in the position to tell any democracy or any government or national parliament when to ratify and how fast they should do it. We all hope that the commitment to these countries that we took in Madrid will be completed as soon as possible, noting that this is the fastest accession process ever, at least since the fall of communism. So I cannot say which are the domestic reasons for the two countries yet not to ratify. I'll mention also something which is very, very important when it comes to our Turkish allies. They've been going through tremendous challenges after the earthquake. That's a nation that has been suffering from terrorism for decades, like probably no one else. So when, under the auspices of our Secretary General in Madrid, we negotiated this trilateral memorandum between Turkey, Sweden and Finland, and it was basically Turkey and Sweden. Finland has a little bit less concern from Ankara on terrorism. We are also expecting all the parties to deliver on their promises in the memorandum. And I think we'll have this week in Brussels, after the visit of Secretary General Stoltenberg to Ankara and meeting President Erdogan, a new fresh start of the meeting between the three in order to advance these things. I also have to say that Sweden, as you know, in Ireland, a EU member state, is also chairing the EU Council presidency. And I think that what Sweden has done in convening a donor conference for Turkey for reconstruction and being also so forthcoming in answering to some of the legitimate concerns from Turkey, I think in the end they will be conducive for a full ratification by all allies. And then with great pride and joy, we'll be depositing the instrument ratification, the State Department, according to the rules of the Washington Treaty.
Yes, we wish that process well. I think we're running close to the time coming up. A last question, Deputy Secretary General. The EU and NATO have developed a very increasing cooperation. Can you tell us how is the EU cooperating with NATO in the support for the Ukrainians in this war?
No, thank you. That's I would say, is nothing short of remarkable. I think last week we had here in NATO HQ, I think a few yards from the place I'm talking to you right now, the first ever meeting between our Secretary General, Josep Borrell, and Mito Kuleba from Ukraine. So a sign of direct coordination at leadership level between the two organizations in our help to Ukraine. We also have many other strands of work with the EU in helping Ukraine. We also have a number of joint partnerships, NATO and EU, to support other countries that need our support. And one is Moldova. The other one is Bosnia. Another one, more to the south, is Jordan and Tunisia. And we are actively working with the EU to deepen and broaden the level of partnerships that we do. In our joint declaration that we just signed, one month ago, we identified new avenues of deeper cooperation between NATO and EU on resilience, on cyber, on new technologies, on space, on climate change and security, where I believe also Ireland will be interested in the tremendous progress that NATO is making on this very, very topic, and of course global competition, because this is not just a European situation, it's a global situation. So I'm a huge fan of the European project. By the way, I have the European Constitution signed by my own hand at home. And I'm still a little bit sad that didn't go through. So, yeah, lots of synergies and very, very strong partnership between our two organizations.
That's very interesting to know. I think we have come to the end of our discussion. We greatly appreciate you joining us. I think you've opened a lot of windows for us in discussing the fight against what is happening and the support that's been given to Ukraine. We wish you well in promoting this. You have a lot of work and a lot of responsibility, and we really appreciate you joining us today to explain in greater detail the challenges that Ukraine is facing, and which we hope they will continue to progress and to do well in this war, which is not of their choice and which is totally unprovoked. So thank you very much indeed, Mircea. It was a pleasure to see you. We do hope you will come to Ireland when time is less pressing for you. But thank you again for joining us.
I think the Belgian embassy, which is the contact point embassy in Dublin for NATO, and also my good friend, the Romanian ambassador, Laurențiu, will be encouraging me to come. And I look forward also to seeing you, Mary, and your colleagues in person. And again, I'm a great fan of your country, and I'm a great fan of our partnership.
Well, thank you very much indeed. You would be most welcome here. Thank you again, Dr. And good wishes. Thank you to everybody who's joined us today. Bye-bye for now.